Mazzara and Parra project to Amiwara. Herrera, Cabrera, don't let the Bay Bib scare ya. Machado or Bono or Nolan Garantano.
We'll teach you how to win Rondo. Start, sit, and drop, and all you need to know. Outlaws, Rick Porcello. Now let's get on with the show.
Fantasy Baseball Today podcast here on August 31st. It is Wednesday, early afternoon. I'm Adam Azer with Scott White. We're going to help you set your lineup for tonight. We're going to help you decide who you want to pick up for next week. Talk about Johnny Cueto, a bunch of hot hitters. Jed Jerko homered again, Scott. CJ Cron, two home runs. Oh, my goodness. What is that?
Oh, my goodness gracious. All the players we've been talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure we're the only people talking about them, too. All over it.
It seems that way. You know, I actually may have sold CJ Cron a little short yesterday when we were talking about him. I'm starting to come around to Mr. Cron.
Two home run game? Does it for you?
Well,
it wasn't just that.
Right. I mean, he's been hot since before he missed 6 weeks with a broken hand.
Yes. Yeah. The 20 yes. games before CJ Cron went on the DL with a broken hand, he batted .351 with a .689 slugging percentage, six home runs, and seven doubles, and only 10 strikeouts in 20 games. So, more on Cron a little bit later. He is 28% owned. We got some emails to read at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Now's a really good time to send your emails. Obviously, we're not as busy as we used to be because people have dropped out and they are done. And, you know, not just of the podcast, but fantasy baseball in general. But you loyal listeners, send us your emails. I don't want to make it sound like we have five people listening, by the way. We have much more than that. But now's a great time to send your questions and good chance to get it read on the show. Your quote of the day is from Anthony Rizzo. Anthony Rizzo, Scott, is a first baseman for the Cubs, and he said this about Kyle Hendricks, quote, "He's not the guy who's getting away with plus-plus stuff. He's just executing his game plan, and he knows how to attack hitters. He studies hitters, and he went to Dartmouth, and he has a really good education, so he out-tricks guys." Ivy League, okay. We're inferior to Kyle Hendricks. I get it, Anthony Rizzo.
I like how he just kind of kept adding on facts that he knew. That's what you do. That's actually the analyst trick. If you're at a loss for what to say about a player, just throw a bunch of facts out there and hope it leads you down another path.
Yeah, he's 6 foot two. He was born in the Midwest.
Yeah, exactly. And then maybe Hendricks. I could springboard that into an opinion.
So let's springboard it. Let's springboard into Hendricks' opinion.
Oh, I have to give an opinion on Hendricks?
Number 14 starting pitcher in points leagues this year, number 8 in Roto, 13-7, 209 ERA, .98 whip, and less than a strikeout per inning, but he's thrown 7 or more innings in 4 of 6 starts in August, and I feel like we talk about Hendricks every time he pitches and how great he is, but we never had this awesome quote from Anthony Rizzo, so that changes things.
No, we didn't. It definitely makes a big impact on me, personally. I think completely differently about Hendricks knowing he went to Dartmouth. But
you can appreciate the cerebral element of the game.
No, I think Hendricks is a terrific pitcher. And I think he was last year, too, even though the ERA was about a run and a half higher. The peripherals were similar, and There was a sense maybe that he underachieved a little ERA-wise last year, so I guess he's making up for it this year by overachieving. And the only reason I think he might be overrated in some circles is because of the innings. But like you said, 4 of his last 6, 7+. That's after 2 of his first 20 were 7+. So that seems to be changing the way Madden is using him. And it's changing, obviously, for the better.
All right, so Hendricks is Hendricks. Let's talk about the more interesting guys. Let's play Who Would You Rather Have Here? Who would you rather have here? Jed Jerko or Hernan Perez or Todd Frazier? Three third base options here. Jerko, this is unfreaking believable. Now, Scott alluded to this yesterday. Updated stats now. Jed Jerko has 17 home runs since the All-Star break. That's incredible. And he's only the number 14 third baseman in points leagues and number 7 in Roto. Number 7 in Roto is really low for a guy who's hit 17 home runs. That's as many in Brian Dozier. And it's like, I'm looking, I'm like, no, this can't be right. Like, somebody is cheating Jed Jerko somehow out of a better ranking in fantasy. but they're not. So Jerko's number 14 in points, number 7 in Roto. Hernan Perez since the break is number 3 in points, number 1 in Roto. And Frazier since the break is number 20 in points, number 18 in Roto. He did homer yesterday, but he's having another bad second half. So rank those three, Scott White.
I am going to rank them, well, okay, it depends first if it's Roto or head-to-head. Because believe it or not, if it's Roto, I'm going Hernan Perez first because the steals are that valuable. But Todd Frazier would be the second choice in that format. He'd be the first choice in points leagues. Jerko's definitely bringing up the rear in either format, which isn't to say he's not useful, but not on the same level. Todd Frazier, the fact that he's coming out of it, obviously, helps me to regain some trust in him.
Okay. I hope he's coming out of it. He's pretty frustrated.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Who would you rather have, Scott White? CJ Krohn, Mike Napoli, or Jake Lamb? CJ Krohn, Mike Napoli, or Jake Lamb, who is batting 190 with 5 home runs since the All-Star break, coinciding with a minor injury that caused him to miss a few games.
Mike Napoli is the clear number one here, even though he's been slumping lately. I think I might give the edge to Krohn. Not a long-term assessment, of course, but in terms of setting your lineup right now with so few weeks remaining. I actually think I might lean toward Krohn over Lamb because not only is Lamb slumping, but there are playing time concerns with him. Even when he was going well, he didn't start that often against left-handers, and that hasn't changed.
Okay, now Krohn, he's been, you know, very, very good lately, obviously. 3 home runs in his last 2 games, batting .448 for Krohn on a 7-game hitting streak. And as I mentioned, about 1,100 OPS, 20 games before going on the DL. And last year, he had a nice second half. It wasn't great, but he's a much better player, I think, than the garbage he was at the beginning of the season. And he's totally the kind of guy, CJ Krohn, that you drop just before his big week, like I did in one of our Roto leagues. And who picked him up, Scott?
In one of our Roto, well, it wasn't me.
No, it wasn't you. It was that traitor, Al Melchior.
Remember him? Man. I do, vaguely. The memory's fading.
Yeah, so, all right, Krohn's hot and he's 28% owned. Finally, who would you rather own? Scott Schebler? Schebler with a .357 batting average and 5 home runs in his last 15 games? Or Jacoby Ellsbury, who has 2 steals since the All-Star break? Oh, thanks, Jacoby. 2 steals.
Yeah, I don't really like either of them. I think I would lean Ellsbury if I had to. But this hot streak for Schebler, it's just not long enough for me to really change my assessment of him. I knew he had power. I'm just not sure he's going to be a consistent enough hitter at this level to really tap into it enough to be useful.
All right, so not really feeling Scott Schebler, 13%
owned. No. It's not an endorsement of Ellsbury. I think I'd rather have Markakis than Ellsbury, actually, but don't really want Schebler.
Scott, who would you rather have, SeatGeek or any other lame ticket website on the planet?
Oh, SeatGeek,
yeah,
for sure. SeatGeek.
Yeah. And what would you rather have, Scott? $0 or $20?
I'm going to go with 20.
Oh, no. Take zero. Take $0. Oh, be that guy. I don't want any money. Take money from me. Yeah. Now, of course, you want your 20 bucks. We can get you that on SeatGeek with our promo code FANTASY. All caps, FANTASY. Type that in. $20 rebate on tickets for your first purchase. When you download the SeatGeek app and you go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, the promo code again is FANTASY, all caps. And SeatGeek is going to send you 20 bucks after you've made your first ticket purchase. I just got a tweet earlier today, true story. Someone said, hey, I got my 20 bucks back from SeatGeek. The tickets were only 40 bucks. Now they're 20. I mean, that is great. So SeatGeek is awesome and an opportunity to save money. And what is SeatGeek? Well, for me, it's the app I use every time I need tickets to a concert or a game. With SeatGeek, you can look up the event you're interested in, or SeatGeek will just tell you the awesome events that are in your area. That's a pretty cool feature, too. SeatGeek will pull in tickets from multiple sites, pulls them all together in one place, ranks the seats based on value, and lets you see the view from your seat. So it's just a one-stop shop. You don't have to go scouring the internet anymore. Everything you need on SeatGeek. The app is great. It's ticketing made easy. There's no reason to use anything else. And use SeatGeek today and save 20 bucks on the app with our promo code fantasy. All right, let's move on. Talk about the standouts from yesterday, from Tuesday's games. And I've got nothing but pitchers here. I think we just talked about some standout hitters. But I want to talk about Kendall Graveman, Scott. 49% owned, very unexciting with the strikeouts. But over his last 14 starts now, 14 starts, it's a big stretch. 2 days before my birthday it started, by the way. He's the number 10 pitcher in points leagues, number 15 in Roto. Graveman's got an 8-3 record, a 3.12 ERA, and a 1.04 whip, and a whole lot of ground balls. Do you ever even consider starting Kendall Graveman, who's 49% owned?
Wow, I'm surprised he ranks that high over that length of time. That's almost a half season.
I know.
That's, I mean, surely an 8-3 record has something to do with it, and Graveman doesn't deserve all the credit for that, but he has been surprisingly reliable, kind of like Straley has, except in Graveman's case, I feel like the ratios are even worse. He has given up more home runs than you'd expect for somebody who depends so much on ground balls, and that makes me nervous. So he's not missing bats, and when they're making contact, they're hitting home runs at a high rate. I think ground ball pitchers in general, well, I don't just think that, it's a fact. They give up more singles than fly ball pitchers. So it just seems like a risky game trusting in Graveman. I think there's something to be said for playing the hot hand. I think with the right matchups, particularly in a two-start week, he's usable, but I wouldn't want to put too much of my trust in him.
And I do think he's in a two-start week this week, but let me confirm on Kendall Graveman. Again, he's owned in half of our CBSSports.com leagues, and I'll come back to that. Willie Peralta and Seth Lugo. I don't think I am in any leagues that I would consider these guys, but a lot of our owners are in very deep leagues. And Peralta, since being recalled, has a 3 ERA, 3 quality starts and 5 starts. The other non-quality starts were 6 innings, 4 runs, and 5 innings, 2 runs, so he hasn't had one really bad start. And he was great last night against St. Louis. Peralta struck out 10 Cardinals, gave up 3 hits and 1 run in 7 innings. And you talked about Lugo yesterday. He was one of your favorite low-end 2-star pitchers for this fantasy week, and he had a nice start against the Marlins. Yeah. Would you consider Peralta or Lugo? They're owned in less than 10% of CBSSports.com leagues.
I wouldn't. I'm not sure I'd consider adding either right now. Peralta, I'd come much closer to it, because anytime you have that guy who throws 98 miles per hour, you're just waiting for him to turn in a start like this one. And I'm going to read you off his swinging strike totals by game, starting May 1st.
Wait, who is it? Which one is this?
Willie Peralta.
Okay.
Starting May 1st, according to baseballreference.com, swinging strike totals 2-2-2-10-7-3-6-6-10-10-4-10-19.
But the 10-10-4-19 are all since coming back from the minors, right?
Exactly, exactly. So there hasn't just been a shift in, you know, he has a 5-start stretch where he has happened to not allow more as many earned runs. There's been legitimate dominance here that he wasn't showing before. Now, it was only really reflected in the strikeout rate in this start. But again, the guy throws 98 miles per hour, has a full arsenal of pitches. I think it's possible this could be the start of something. I'm just not sure I'm ready to, you know, at this stage of the season, it's something that I'm ready to trust in after only one start like this.
Now, I do remember reading for Peralta when he came up that he had made a mechanical adjustment that had helped his velocity, which was already good, but it made it even better. And I looked at Brooks Baseball this morning. I didn't see a major change or anything like that. I don't know if I saw much of a change at all.
Yeah, I haven't either, because I remember you bringing that up, and I looked into it, and he's always thrown hard.
Yeah, he's always thrown hard.
But thrown hard as in 98 miles per hour. That's impressive in and of itself. It's just a matter of, you know, sequencing pitches properly and locating properly, and there's base talent for Willie Peralta to work with there. It's kind of like what I've been saying all year for Mike Fultonevich, except I think maybe, until recently, Fultonevich actually looked like the more advanced of the two.
Yeah.
It might be pretty close, though.
But you know, the problem is Fulte hasn't really, you know, consistently put it together. I've said the same thing about two other guys, Nate Evaldi and Joe Kelly. And it's just like, I've waited and waited and waited, and those guys haven't really done anything except for maybe a month at a time. They might be good. Mm-hmm. But still worth mentioning, Peralta 5% owned, showing some signs. And yesterday, both Craig Counsell and Mike Matheny talked about how good his slider was. So maybe that's a key for him.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we're just talking about fastball velocity with all these pitchers. Of course, how good their secondary pitches are makes a difference, too. And that I think, remains to be seen.
Now, Kendall Graveman, to go back to him, he is a two-star pitcher this week, and he has Boston this weekend. So if you're in a daily league, you know, weekly league, you're stuck either way. But a daily league, start or sit Graveman against the Red Sox at home this weekend?
I don't think I could start him with that matchup.
Yeah, that'd be tough. What about Johnny Cueto at the Cubs? Johnny Cueto, is he running out of gas? He threw so many innings in the first half. And in four starts already in the second half, he's failed to pitch six innings, four of his nine starts, in which he has a 4.25 ERA since the All-Star break. Cueto was bad again last night. I don't know, man. I don't know if I'd trust him at the Cubs.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I'd probably be inclined to play him because I just don't like the idea of losing because I sat Johnny Cueto. But I could understand sitting him. I mean, it's been going on pretty much, well, even really before the second half, right? Just a lot of less than quality starts.
And it's just so concerning because we saw what happened to him in the last 2 months of 2015 when Cueto got traded to the Royals. He was pretty bad. And
yeah, gosh. I don't feel like this is quite that bad because he's actually missing bats at an even better rate than he was early in the season. Now, when with the Royals, the strikeout rate just completely disappeared on him.
More strikeouts, more runs.
Mo strikeouts, mo problems.
Yes, good team name we got there. Yeah, there were a couple of bad starts, June 26th and July 1st, really bad. And then he threw a complete game, one run against Colorado. I guess that is the thing. I mean, there are some really good starts in there for Cueto. You look at his previous two starts, 13 innings, two runs, only eight strikeouts. And start before that, 6 2/3 and three runs against Baltimore. So it's not like he's been terrible every time out. Just a little unpredictable right now for Johnny Cueto. And, alright, Scott's on the fence, but probably would go with him at the Cubs this week. Any other standouts you want to get to from yesterday?
You know who we haven't talked about enough is Jose Reyes.
Okay.
We didn't talk about him yesterday, did we?
You're right. I basically have never talked about him. It's weird.
Well, I pulled these numbers 2 days ago, but considering he has a four-hit game since then, that one coming yesterday, I would imagine it's only gotten better. In terms of head-to-head points per game this year, Jose Reyes is the fourth best shortstop eligible player. So ahead of Corey Seager, ahead of Carlos Correa, ahead of Francisco Lindor, Gene Segura, Atlantis Diaz, just about everybody at that position with so much added depth. And he was a top six shortstop last year in terms of head-to-head points per game as well, which I thought made him underappreciated at the time. Doesn't get the big steals total that he did in his prime, so I think everyone's just inclined to write him off. But he does so many things well. He gets a lot of extra base hits, makes contact at a high rate, does still steal some bases. I think he's a perfect 6-for-6 so far. And that kind of makes him... I mean, he's not so different from Lindor, really. I'd call him a poor man's Lindor because I think Lindor's much safer, obviously. But if you lost Aledmys Diaz or Trevor Story or whoever, and you know maybe you tried your hand with Brad Miller at first and he's cooled off, I think it's time to make a move for Reyes, who's still I think close to 40% available.
He is it. 34% available. Reyes is owned in 66% of CBSSports.com leagues. Would you rather have Reyes or Addison Russell?
I think Reyes. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. He's, by the way, 6 of 8 stealing.
6 of 8, okay.
Still pretty good.
But he's running a lot.
Yeah.
More than I expected.
You know, he was getting relevant, and then he went on the DL, and I kind of stopped talking about him. But since he's come back, .356 batting average in August. He came back on August 13th. So good stuff for Reyes right now. And he leads off, which is always a good thing. Gets you a lot of fantasy points, a lot more at bats. The big news for you, Clayton Kershaw pitched only two innings in a simulated game, but he came away feeling pretty good. He might make a rehab start. You might get him back at some point next week, next scoring period. Yasiel Puig was claimed off waivers. They could work out a trade for him or just, you know, claim him, you know, take him back off from waivers and he won't get traded, Puig. But Puig's been so good in the minors. Do you think it's worth adding him in any leagues right now?
It would have to be a deep league. I really don't expect to see him in the majors again this year. I think even though the Dodgers could use him, the fact they haven't called him up yet tells me they're not really missing him.
Oh, they are. They seem completely over him. But
yeah.
Well, tomorrow's September 1st, so I guess there could be some surprises. But I'm just saying in the hope that he could get traded today.
And get called up for some other team?
Yes.
Well, I'd really be surprised if he got traded today. I think I would, like, I'd rather own Hunter Renfroe than Yasiel Puig. Both because I think he's more likely to play enough to matter. And I trust him to perform more, which sounds weird for a guy who hasn't even appeared in the majors yet and didn't walk much in the minors. But I mean, hitting well at AAA for Puig, it doesn't really tell me anything. Like, if he hit poorly at AAA, that would tell me something. But
yeah.
Hitting well there doesn't really tell me anything.
It's funny because Puig's, you know, kind of publicly took the blame and said he needs to, I don't know, improve his attitude, that kind of stuff. And we know there are issues with Puig. He's probably not the model teammate. I'm not saying his teammates don't like him, but you know what I mean. Late to meetings and things like that. And there's just been issues.
Yeah, I don't think it's clear that his teammates like him. I think
I don't want to speculate. I don't know, but everybody knows. If you follow baseball, Yasiel Puig's got some baggage or whatever.
Mm.
I guess if he straightens that up, works a little harder, it wouldn't surprise me if he's a great player at some point.
Oh yeah, I mean the talent is. I mean you don't even have to see him pick up a bat to see the talent, you know.
Yeah.
But. It's really hard to be good in the majors. It's one thing to be a good baseball player in the minors or in Cuba, but in the majors, it takes a special kind of person beyond the talent. And that's not to say Puig can't become that. He absolutely can, but he hasn't yet.
Right. It's like how I totally tiptoed around that. I didn't want to say anything offensive. I wasn't going down that path, but I was like, pick your words carefully here, Adam.
Yeah.
I think I did. I did great. Gerrit Cole. He could come back pretty soon. He's hopeful that he'll pitch again this season. He pitched right after going on the DL. He played catch. So hopefully, Cole can come back soon. But you know what's interesting, Scott? Reading the article yesterday, I think on ESPN.com, and I believe it was the Pirates trainer who was talking about how the rib injury that Cole had in spring training may have contributed to other arm issues because, you know, he went on the DL earlier this year with a strained triceps. And it's just, I always think that if somebody has an injury in spring training, especially if it's a side injury, you never know. It's such a guessing game, but there's got to be a little bit of trepidation. A little bit. I do think those things can linger.
No, I mean, we have seen examples of this the past couple years.
Verlander,
I feel
right?
like it's, you know, I'm struggling to even come up with the specific names, but it's also an issue where much more often than not, it's a non-issue. It's just, yeah, you can't completely dismiss it when you hear about it.
Well, yeah, but what about Verlander? Because remember, he had the core surgery.
Well, I mean, that's a completely different thing. Core surgery. That seems like, because Denard Span actually had that injury, I think prior to last year or early last year or something like that. And it seems like a procedure where players feel like they can come back. And so they do, but they're not like it takes a longer recover period than, players give it credit for. And it either affects their performance or in Span's case, like he just didn't work to regain the ab muscles enough. And so it took a toll on his back. So it's, Yeah, I mean, health is one of those things where it can come unraveled quickly if you're pushing it.
Yeah.
And that may have been where it started for, in this case.
Yeah, but also people who don't have their regular spring training routine. I am also struggling to come up with names. Verlander was a guy that came out, that stood out to me, but maybe it's a different situation, like you said. But I just don't like it. I don't like it. James Paxton, I lost a fingernail last night. I don't like that. I'm squeamish. Gross. Yeah, he expects to make his next start, but Paxton's next start is against... Oh, he has two starts next week. Texas at home and Oakland on the road, and he just struggled last night against Texas.
Of course he has two starts. Right at the time when you'd really like to see one more start before deciding whether or not you can trust him. That's when the two-start week is. That's perfect.
Yeah.
That's the way things have been going here lately. Musgrove. Ugh. So, I don't know that it's clear he's going to make two starts because this was an issue he had last year and it ended his season. So they're thinking they can work around it this time, but it happened, I think, in the third inning, and he was limited to just fastballs and curveballs from that point forward. So it's not a small issue.
Yeah, that is important. If he can't throw his arsenal, he's got a pretty good fastball and a pretty good curveball, but he can't be a two-pitch pitcher. Very inconsistent guy. It's like you're getting 5 innings and 3 or 4 runs. You're getting 8 innings and 1 run with Paxton. It's very annoying.
Yeah.
And the matchups don't matter. I mean, what made me pick him up after picking him up and then dropping him was the brilliant start at Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, he's been just a roller coaster. Darn Paxton. Nelson Cruz has a nerve issue in his hand, and that is making it difficult for Cruz to grip a bat. Denard Span left with a stiff neck, of course. Steven Matz is not going to be ready to come off the DL tomorrow. So Jacob DeGrom, this is actually good news for DeGrom owners. He'll be moved up to face the Marlins instead of the Nationals. He'll pitch on Thursday. Hunter Pence returned to the lineup. He had 3 hits, including a double against the Diamondbacks. AJ Pollock, 2 hits, 2 walks, and a steal. Woo! Yeah. Aledmys Diaz, close to beginning a rehab assignment. You interested?
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah, sneaky.
Mm-hmm.
Jameson Taillon and Matt Boyd were both sent to AAA, but they'll both be back. You will see that this time of year. Guys get sent to AAA just because the rosters are about to expand, and they'll be brought right back up. And Tim Tebow, we talk about it's so hard to play baseball. If you're Yasiel Puig, you got to take it seriously. Tim Tebow can do anything, Scott. He had his tryout yesterday. Good for him.
I mean, he's built kind of like Puig.
Yeah.
You've seen how big his shoulders are? He's like that Looney Tunes character, the monster with that's like just a red hairy monster, you know?
Was he in Space Jam?
He's all shoulders. I think he was in Space Jam, sure.
Yeah, I might know that guy. I don't quite remember.
That's what Tebow reminds me of.
Tebow's pretty big. You know, anybody who's criticizing Tebow, just like get over it. Let the guy live his life. He wants to try out to play baseball, let him play baseball.
I mean, if a team signs him, then that shows it was a worthy endeavor, right? I mean,
yeah.
I don't think anyone's expecting him to reach the majors.
But yeah,
even the team that
signs
him wouldn't expect him to reach the majors. 90% of minor leaguers don't reach the majors, so he'd just be another one of those guys.
Would hope, though, that if he got signed, that he would have to go through what any ordinary minor leaguer would go through.
Sure.
I don't think
they'd stick him at AA right away.
All right, guys. Or just Guy. Scott. Scott, you were right about something.
Really?
This section of the show is called Scott Was Right.
Oh. I like that.
You were dead on about listening to video game soundtracks while you work.
Really? You tried it?
I tried it with Mega Man 2, and you're right. I don't get distracted. I just kind of enjoy myself.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
You found that Dr. Wily's Castle track, huh?
Oh, now you tried it?
That's the clear standout on that one.
I
played the game, actually.
But I like the first bad guy. I don't remember who it is. It's like Airman or Flashman or something. I don't know. The first bad guy that they have on the soundtrack, I think it's track 3 or 4, is my favorite. But what was good about it, Scott, is that I cannot beat Mega Man 2. I've never, ever beaten Mega Man 2. So I finally got to hear the victory music. I've never heard it before. So that was encouraging.
YouTube, man. You don't even have to play games anymore. Just watch somebody else do it. Oh, all right.
Dude, I can't believe you've never played Mega Man. You know, they've got that Nintendo Mini out now.
You know, well, I mean, I have a Nintendo. I could just buy the cartridge on eBay or whatever and play it if I wanted
to. Okay, yeah, you should do that.
But I did have Mega Man 2, the old Tiger handheld game. Remember those?
No.
The Tiger games?
I don't remember that at all.
They were like this little, like the screen was just black and white and the movement wasn't fluid at all. It was just like a series of still frames. You know, they'd have like the little plus button on the left and the little equal sign button on the right. And you don't remember those?
No, I don't.
Somebody listening remembers them. They were all the rage circa 1992.
All right. So if you guys don't know, the Nintendo Mini, when is it out? I don't know if it's out yet or if you can just pre-order it, but it comes with 30 games and it's like $50 or something like that.
It's 30, I think.
30 bucks?
I'm not sure.
Well, I'm
not planning on buying it since I have the.
Oh, it's $60 and it comes, November 11th. So unfortunately there's still some time. It'll be my Thanksgiving present to myself. All right. Bullpen stuff. Andrew Miller got a save last night, an inning and two thirds. He has now been used for more than three outs five times with Cleveland. That's in a month. And Cody Allen threw 37 pitches the night before on Monday. So, did we learn anything last night, or do you think Cody, he had to be unavailable, 37 pitches the night before?
Right. Yeah, I don't think we learned anything, except that Miller's going to get occasional saves still.
However, I do think the fact that Miller has pitched five times more than three outs, kind of a bad thing for him in terms of saves.
Yeah.
You buy it?
I guess. It depends whether they bring him in the eighth or the ninth.
Or the seventh, as they have.
Yeah.
Edwin Diaz blew a save last night. Last five appearances for Edwin Diaz, 5 2/3, 7 hits, 5 runs, 7 walks, and 10 strikeouts. And only 15 walks and 38 2/3. So walks were not a problem. He's lost his control recently. He has 70 strikeouts and 38 2/3, though. Holy cow. Are you worried about Edwin Diaz losing his closer's role?
Not really. I mean, full disclosure, I'm stashing Steve Cishek in an AL-only roto league. 12-team AL-only. So, you know, where I'd be picking between middle relievers anyway.
Okay.
It's not really I'm worried about him. It's just I could see the possibility where he does lose his job.
Yeah, he's a rookie after all.
Yeah.
And Fernando Salas is 14% owned. 14% owned for Fernando Salas. And he got another save. Hooray.
Good for him.
I knew you weren't going to care.
I'll put him a step above Cingrani now. Does that make you feel better?
You know what I noticed, though? Like, I feel like things even out. You know, the Angels had that streak. They lost double digits in a row, whatever. I don't remember what it was. They had that terrible streak.
Yeah.
And then a lot of times that kind of happens. A guy goes so long without getting a save, then he gets a lot in a row.
Yeah, I mean, remember when Cam Bedrosian first got put in the role, it took him forever to get. Well, I think maybe he got his first save right away, but then that second chance took a while, and then he got hurt, and now who knows when we'll see him again.
Yeah.
Or Cam.
I also feel like Aroldis Chapman has had a lot more save chances than Hector Rondon did.
Yeah.
Does it feel that way? We could look that up.
I know he's made up a lot of ground in the head-to-head points rankings. He's now, I think, in the top 15 when, you know, obviously he missed all that time at the beginning of the year.
Aroldis Chapman with the Cubs has 11 saves. He's been there for a little over a month. He has 11 saves. That's not fair to Hector Rondon. That's not.
It's not. And meanwhile, Dellin Betances, I feel like he hasn't gotten a ton of save opportunities.
No.
The team where Chapman was getting a lot.
And he did get the win last night, though. Betances got you two scoreless innings and a win last night, so you will take that. FanDuel. Now, you're not going to start Dellin Betances on FanDuel. And actually, I've told you all about FanDuel Fantasy Baseball. I actually want to talk to you about FanDuel Fantasy Football. It is so much fun. You can play Friends Mode, season-long fantasy, with a new team every week against your friends. That's really cool. You got 50-50 contests where the top half win cash. You know, if you have a dollar in your pocket, there are games for a dollar. So what we want you to do is go to FanDuel.com/CBS and get 5 free fantasy football entries. 5 free entries on FantasyFootball.com/CBS. Void where prohibited. But these are entries into NFL beginner contests. You get 1 free entry a week, 5 weeks in a row. And if you finish anywhere in the top half of those contests, you win some cash. You got 5 free chances to win money on FanDuel. That is awesome. Go to FanDuel.com/CBS. And I also want to tell you that FanDuel this year has new features to ensure a fair and level playing field. And you're really going to be excited about that. All right, to finish up, we've got some lineup news. Well, first of all, the Tigers called up Jacoby Jones to play third base. He went 2-for-4 with a double against the White Sox. Scott, is Jacoby Jones on anyone's radar?
Maybe AL only. There's some pop there, but there's also a lot of swing and miss there. I don't see him being an impact player over the long haul.
Not sure why I care so much about Jose Peraza, but he started yesterday at shortstop, but Cozart was DHing. They were at an AL park at the Angels. And Peraza went 4-for-4. He had a steal. He was caught stealing. And look, if you need some steals and he's playing every day, could really help. But we'll see what happens when the Reds go back home. And Jerod Dyson has been batting leadoff against righties lately, and Dyson has stolen 4 bases in his last 3 games, and he's 10% owned. So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
1 up, 2 down. 1 up is J.D. Martinez. 26 games since coming off the DL. J.D. Martinez is batting .410 in 26 games with 7 home runs. Actually, kind of low home runs for a .410 batting average. For
whatever. 7 home runs in 26 games.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, he's awesome. I think he's a candidate to go ahead of Giancarlo Stanton last year, next year. Not last year. We're not redrafting last year's teams. Come on.
But do you still feel like J.D. Martinez is kind of like Jay Bruce? Very streaky guy. Could go on a terrible, terrible stretch for a month.
No, I think he's proven over the last 3 years now that he's a much better source of batting average than Bruce ever was.
Well, yeah, I guess I didn't mean so literally, I guess, in final stats. I just meant in terms of streakiness.
Yeah, he doesn't go that cold for very long because, I mean, otherwise he's not the 290 hitter we've come to know him to be.
Oh, okay, yeah, I mean, it's a fair point. All right, 2 down. Aaron Altherr, he's 30% owned. See any reason to own Aaron Altherr?
I don't know. In Roto Leagues, 5 outfielders, there's that power-speed combo's kind of interesting.
Miguel Sano. Miguel Sano is 2 down, number 2. And he is struggling badly. No home runs, 2 doubles in his last 13 games. And just having a bad year, Scott. He's 85% owned, Sano.
I think of him as strictly a roto guy for making up ground in home runs. Because there's not a lot of great things happening there peripherally. And he's not... I mean, that's an inconsistent player.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. In the rotation, we've got J-Hap, Zach Greinke, Adam Wainwright, Jake Odorizzi, and Drew Pomeranz. Let's take it step by step here. Hap has been kind of okay lately. His next start is a 1-start next week at the Yankees. The last time Hap went to the Yankees, he gave up 3 home runs. Didn't have that bad of a start. 7 1/3, 7 hits, 4 runs, 1 walk, and 9 strikeouts, but 3 homers. Gave up 2 last night at the Orioles. Would you start Hap next week at the Yankees?
I believe I would.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't worry about the left-handers taking advantage of that short porch so much against a left-handed pitcher.
Zach Greinke, 1 strikeout yesterday, but otherwise a very good start. And he's got 2 starts next week at the Dodgers and home against the Giants. I'm sure you're going to start him, right?
Yes.
What about this Adam Wainwright character and his excellent start? 7 innings, 3 hits, 1 run. No walks and 7 Ks at Milwaukee for Wainwright. And he's had such an easy schedule lately, other than a really bad start at the Cubs. But he struggled against Atlanta. He struggled at Philadelphia. He struggled against the Mets. Now, the Philadelphia game was 6 innings, 3 runs. We were hoping for better. Two starts next week for Wainwright at Pittsburgh and home against Milwaukee. I guess this is kind of like the Paxton thing. Why does he have to have two starts right now?
Yeah, it is kind of like that, but I actually have a higher level of trust in Wainwright because he made a specific change to his delivery. I don't know exactly what it is. He just said he watched a lot of tape and he decided he needed to go back to a more aggressive delivery, whatever that means. But the result was about 1 to 2 miles per hour gain on his fastball. So, I mean, when there's a tangible result like that, that's a pretty easy story to buy. And, I think he's going to be back to being, pretty trustworthy.
Oh.
As long as he sticks to it.
I was totally with you there until that last sentence.
Well, why would he?
I would just like to see more. I'd like to see him keep it up. Apparently he had a very good fastball last night. There was, you know, they talked about that, but.
Right.
I'd like to see it for more than one start.
If he recognized the problem and made a conscious decision to correct it, I mean, I guess it's possible he could relax into the old delivery, but I don't know. I feel like he's on top of this.
Well, it's just with Paxton, right? Paxton made a mechanical adjustment and now his curveball was going to be better. And he got these amazing results, like that start against Toronto. And since then, I have no idea if he's gone back to his old mechanics. I just know that sometimes, you know, we hear these talks about mechanical changes and we see these great results. That doesn't mean it's going to last. Now, the fact that the velocity was up is definitely encouraging.
Yeah, that's fair. I just think Wainwright's history, even his history just within this year, and the way he kind of wears his thoughts on his sleeve throughout all his ups and downs, I think it makes it easier to trust in him, to give him the benefit of the doubt over somebody like Paxton, who's never really done it before in the majors and isn't quite as open about everything he's thinking.
Jake Odorizzi with a, you know, pretty good start at Boston. 6 innings, 5 hits, 3 runs, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts. And now Odorizzi in his last 9 starts has a 1.89 ERA. In those 9 starts, that was the 3rd start at a pitcher's park for Odorizzi. So 6 innings, 3 runs, 7 strikeouts. The other 2 were 5 1/3 and 2 earned runs, but 4 total runs at Toronto and 6 innings, 3 runs, 6 strikeouts at the Yankees. So he's been around a quality start in all those pitcher's parks. So the problem here for Odorizzi, I think Chris talked about this on a recent podcast. If he stays on schedule and pitches every 5 games for Tampa Bay, Odorizzi's remaining schedule was Baltimore at home. And honestly, the way he's pitching, Scott, I'd be fine starting him against Baltimore at home. Odorizzi.
Yeah, I think the home starts are you know, because obviously his home's a pitcher's park. I'm just trying to, are you calling Fenway Park a pitcher's park? Is that where?
Did I say pitcher's park? I meant he's had 3 starts at hitter's parks.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, you even wrote pitcher's park. So.
You're right, I did. Okay, Odorizzi in his last 9 starts has had 3 starts at hitter's parks, at Boston, at Toronto, and at the Yankees. And in all 3 of those starts, he's been around 6 innings, 3 runs. So his remaining schedule.
I mean,
what's that?
You'll take that. You'll take that.
Yeah, yeah. Baltimore at home, at the Yankees, at Baltimore, Yankees at home, at the White Sox, and at Texas.
Yeah, I mean, I think he relieved a lot of concerns with this start at Boston. I mean, it doesn't really get much worse than that. I suppose at Toronto and at Baltimore are pretty close. But only one of those at Baltimore is coming up here, and he's just been so reliable over the last couple months. I'd be reluctant to sit him against any of these.
Drew Pomeranz, is he a must-start at this point? He's gotten back
I think
on
so.
Track.
Yeah, I think he's back to being must-start. I like him even more than Odorizzi. I think maybe Odorizzi is somebody I'd sit for a 2-start pitcher who one I didn't necessarily have to find on waivers, but one I already had, but I don't normally start him, but that's the only way to get him in my lineup is to sit Odorizzi. I think that makes sense, but I wouldn't be afraid to start Odorizzi against any of these matchups going forward.
The following players are 2-star pitchers next week. Colin McHugh had a good start against Oakland and Jared Eichhoff, who had a decent start against Washington. McHugh is at Cleveland and home against Chicago. Eichhoff is at Miami and at Washington.
Yeah, that was a bummer. Oh no, wait, sorry. I was looking ahead at Kohler.
Oh no, Kohler we'll get to in a second.
No, McHugh and Eichhoff, what they did weren't bummers. They were fine.
They, and, well, if you were starting your A's or your Nationals, they were kind of bummers.
Yeah, I guess so. McHugh, though, I have a really hard time trusting McHugh, because I think this was one of the very few quality starts he's had recently, and some of those have been really ugly. Yeah, this was his third quality start in 7. The strikeouts have actually been pretty good all year, better than last year, but just too hittable. And I don't think this one start really changes my opinion of him. He's 2 starts next week, you said?
Yeah, at Cleveland and home against the Cubs.
Probably a points league only situation.
Yeah, how about Eichhoff or Daniel Norris? They're both 2-star pitchers. Who would you rather have?
Eichhoff.
Okay. Norris is at the White Sox and home against Baltimore. He just had a bad start against the White Sox, and he never pitches 6 innings. So Norris is 35% owned. I don't think you need to waste your time. And we talked about Graveman, and we talked about Paxton, so let's go to the news and notes. The Indians agree to acquire Coco Crisp from Oakland. It's kind of interesting, Scott. Crisp has a clause in his contract. I believe if he plays 130 games, then he gets his option for next year vests. So I don't think he's going to play that much, because nobody wants to pay him like double-digit millions next year. Ivan Nova on track to make his next start. Neil Walker was out again with a back issue. John Lackey could come off the DL this weekend. And if you're wondering, Tanaka was pitching pretty well. Why did he only pitch 5 innings? They had a long rain delay in the Yankees-Royals game, and that is why. Is not why Edison Volquez didn't last long, though. He was just bad. Tonight's matchups. We can start with some of the day games. The Tigers and White Sox are underway. You won't have this before Drew Smyly and Stephen Wright tee off in Boston. But Dodgers-Rockies, doubleheader today. Ross Stripling and Tyler Anderson in the day game. Any interest in Stripling or Anderson?
At Coors Field, no thanks.
All right, so then how about Rich Hill and Jeff Hoffman tonight? I'm sure we're going to be stacking Dodgers tonight against Jeff Hoffman.
Yeah, we just had this conversation yesterday.
Yeah, we did.
Hence the doubleheader today. I wouldn't want to start either. Of the 4 making starts at Coors Field tonight, Rich Hill is the one I'd come closest to starting.
Now, Shelby Miller will pitch today for the Arizona Diamondbacks. He's still on that team. He's facing the Giants on the road. If Shelby Miller has a good start, would you buy into it at all?
I mean, no, probably not. It would be a Willy Peralta situation, and it would have to be that good for me to even think about it.
Let's look at the game log in the minors. A lot of strikeouts. That's good to see.
But a lot of hits, too, and I don't think his last couple starts were among his best, so...
Was bad. The start before that was 8 innings, 3 runs, gave up 2 homers with 6 strikeouts.
Yeah.
He better dominate AAA. I mean, come on already. Other games today. We've got Gio Gonzalez at Adam Morgan, Nationals at Phillies. Would you start either Gio or Morgan?
I'd lean toward playing Gio, sure, if I had him. Yeah, I think I'd play him.
Paul Clemens and Matt Whistler, a couple of sits tonight, Padres and Braves?
I don't know. Whistler's kind of interesting. I think if I was, you know, if I really felt like I needed that extra start, I think he's worth a roll of the dice.
Aaron Sanchez and Yovani Gallardo. I'm sure you're going to be fine starting Sanchez and fine sitting Gallardo.
Absolutely.
Mets and Marlins, we got David Phelps and Bartolo Colon. Pretty interesting here. Which guy would you prefer? Are they both startable?
They are both startable. I'd prefer Phelps. I think Cologne. I think I might rank Cologne behind Whistler in terms of how likely or how interested I am in starting him.
Make Brandon Finnegan tonight at the Angels. Would you start him against Ricky Nolasco?
Yes.
The Pirates and the Cubs are on ESPN tonight at 8:05. That should be a very... Well, I don't know if it's going to be a good game because Vogelsong's on the mound, but Vogelsong has, you know, been all right. He faces
and Hamill
Jason.
Hasn't.
Yeah, Hamill had one bad start last week. The start before that was at Colorado. I'm not penalizing him for that. So I would start Hamill. What about Vogelsong? How about you? How about both these guys? How do you feel about them?
No, I think I'd probably start Hamill too, but not with a lot of confidence. No way I'd start Vogelsong.
No way Vogelsong. Okay. Pat Dean against Corey Kluber. Start Kluber, sit Dean?
Yes.
And Luke Weaver, I believe you can start him tonight at Milwaukee.
Wow. Hitting the high note there.
I didn't really hit it, Scott. I just flirted with it. would you start Luke Weaver at Milwaukee against Matt Garza?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a worthy gamble.
Hmm. I don't know. I would be a little afraid, honestly.
Okay.
Let's look at the game log. 4 innings, 2 runs, 3 walks at the Cubs. You can excuse it. Major league debut. 5 innings, 9 hits, 3 runs, no walks, 6 strikeouts at Philadelphia. That's disappointing. Very good last time out against Oakland. 6 innings, 4 hits, 1 run, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts. Ugh. I just see 2 out of 3 starts really bad. Ugh. Nervous, Scott.
I mean, the most runs he's allowed in a game is 3.
Yeah, but so, 9 hits and against the Phillies?
It wasn't a good start. But it's not like if he does that against the Brewers, it's going to ruin you. And look, he'll have worse starts in his career than a 3 earned run outing. I'm not saying like that's the absolute floor for him. I'm just saying with a good matchup like this coming off a really good start, knowing obviously he's a talented pitcher who dominated at AA, I don't think we've seen enough bad from him to scare me away considering all those variables.
All right, Luke Weaver, make it happen tonight. Emails and tweets to finish off today's show. We got one from Shane. I'm in a head-to-head points league. My shortstop options are Lindor, Crawford, VR, and Bregman. Who would you start for the playoffs in a points league? Lindor, Crawford, VR, and Bregman.
Lindor. I'm not going to overthink it. Just Lindor. He's been reliable for you all season. Just stick with him.
Yeah, but I guess it could be tough, Scott, if you have like, I don't know how many 5-game weeks we have left, and that's kind of an outlier. So let's just say the Indians have 6 games, and Jonathan VR has 7 games. And VR's been better in points leagues than Lindor. It's close. You still going with Lindor? It's tough,
right? Mean, I don't think there's a wrong answer.
Yeah.
Like, there's going to be a wrong outcome, but it's just guessing, and I just feel more confident with Lindor.
Does this stat mean anything to you? Francisco Lindor at home has a .358 batting average, .528 slugging. Francisco Lindor on the road has a .270 batting average and a .384 slugging percentage. He's hit 24 doubles this year, and 20 of them have come at home.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that's something to think about.
Yeah, it's interesting, huh?
Yeah, I hadn't looked at his home away splits before, but it sounds like something that could very easily be reversed next year. But I think we're deep enough into this year that you need to take it seriously. If it was just him versus Brandon Crawford, that'd be one thing.
Yeah,
but VR and even Bregman are really in the same discussion right now.
Yeah. By the way, Dansby Swanson is kind of reminding me a little bit of Alex Bregman in that he's, you know, stringing together these one-hit games. I think he had 3 last night, and after a really rough start. The only difference is, obviously, Bregman was amazing in the minors and Swanson wasn't.
Yeah. I'm not as confident in Swanson being an impact fantasy player in the next few weeks here as I was Bregman. I was never dropping Bregman. I still have yet to add Swanson in the league.
So VR, by the way, is a lot better against lefties than he is against righties. It doesn't change the steals or anything like that, but these are just things. These are when you should use splits, okay? If you have tough decisions to make, splits could really help you.
Yeah.
Here's an email from Craig. As we reach the end of the regular season, and now that I clinched a playoff spot, I wanted to take a minute to review who and where I drafted the players on my team, and I wanted to share the good and the bad with you. The bad, Adam Jones in round 4, and Yasiel Puig, Russell Martin, and Tyson Ross in rounds 11 through 13. The good, Verlander in round 9, Odor in round 14, I don't know how you pulled that off, and Gregory Polanco in round 17, And he also has Goldschmidt, Machado, Price, and Archer. If Price and Archer just had normal years, your team would be so much better. But I'm glad he made the playoffs. And Craig says, it's funny when you look at your draft and wonder now, what in the world did I do? And I always find it funny, Scott, to look at my team and then look back at my draft and realize how much my roster has changed since the draft.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's... I mean, especially if you're a heavy trader, that's going to be true. You know, a couple of these specific points here. Rougned Odor, round 14. Yeah, I guess that would be good since he lasted that long in your league. But I think most people who drafted Rougned Odor this year, which it was typically in what, the round 6-7 range?
Yeah, I'd say so.
I think they're probably disappointed with the production he's given at that price.
I had Odor in three leagues, and I would say I was not disappointed. I never considered sitting him. I still
right.
have him in two leagues. I'm out of one of the other leagues. But I guess I was hoping for a little more.
To see where he ranks among second basemen.
Yeah, he's what, like eighth-ish?
No, he's lower than that. See how quickly I can pull it up.
Oh, yeah, he's always lower than I think.
I mean, it's just because others have lapped him. I mean,
right, but it's not like he's having a bad year.
It's not just because others have lapped him. He's become such. He's become the swing at everything player. He wasn't a good walk player last year. He was a bad walk player last year, but now he's become like laughably bad. Like, if he's going to be a dozen walks a year, that gives me big concerns about him going forward. And maybe it's just a 1 year fluky thing. But that's a big disappointment.
Well,
the other thing I wanted to point out with this team, not to get stuck on it, but
yeah.
He called Russell Martin bad drafted in round 12. I mean, I guess it's bad in the sense that he was probably dropped in a lot of leagues at some point, and you could have had him for free, but he's been a top five catcher since mid-May, so I mean I don't really think he's as bad as his overall numbers make him out to be.
Yeah, but he was so bad. He was awful for a month. Now Odor, by the way, is 14th in points and 9th in Roto. Two of the leagues I have him in are categories leagues, and I'm fine with it. Again, I was hoping for a little more, but I think he's had a good enough year and a walk-off homer yesterday. So yeah, you know what would be fun?
What would be fun?
Extra points or just a category, walk-off home runs. It would so rarely come into play.
Yeah.
But it would be fun, I think.
Sure. I mean, if you're going to give points for no-hitters, it's probably along those same lines.
Yeah. There you go.
Maybe we should just give points for neither, though.
I would agree with that, I guess. Mike in New York City, should I pick up Gurriel and drop Michael Franco for the playoff run? Oh, I didn't mention this, but Gurriel did not play yesterday. Colby Rasmus was back. Evan Gattis DH'd, and Gurriel sat.
Gurriel's starting in left field today, though. So
oh, cool.
They're finding other ways to get him in. I don't think I'd drop Franco for him.
From Colin, best option rest of season. Drew Smyly, Joe Musgrove, Marco Estrada, or Alex Reyes?
Marco Estrada. It's not particularly close.
Andy from D.C., I need to pick four of these five outfielders for my starting lineup for the playoffs beginning next week. Charlie Blackmon, JD Martinez, Jose Bautista, AJ Pollock, and David Dahl. We've got runs, homers, RBIs, strikeouts, steals, grounded into double play, average, and OPS. So it's an interesting league. Strikeouts count against you. But OPS is also a category that helps. Bautista is on base is so good. All right, Blackmon and JD Martinez are obvious starts. So, Scott, between Bautista, Pollock, and David Dahl, pick two.
Well, until it's abundantly clear that Pollock isn't an everyday player for the Diamondbacks, I think he would be the odd man out. But if that changes, and provided Dahl doesn't cool off, because that's always a possibility too, he's just, you know, he can't sustain this incredible start. I think Bautista might actually be the odd man out in this league. If it was OBP instead of average, that one category, it might change things. But he's not going to help in strikeouts or average or I don't know how often he grounds in double plays. That's one I don't usually
well,
work with.
As a leadoff hitter, he probably won't do it very often.
Yeah.
The other thing is, as much as he doesn't help in average, he's going to help in OPS though.
Yeah, but I mean, Pollock's going to help in OPS.
Pollock's
going
the only
to help
guy
OPS.
Who's
going to
steal bases consistently of these five, so that needs to be considered
right.
too.
Right. That, I think Pollock's an automatic if he is playing every day, but they said this sit every third game. That's how they said they were going to approach it at first. Of course, now he's started four straight games without sitting one.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
there's an off
that.
Day in there that kind of makes things iffy. But in any case.
And don't be afraid to play the matchups, too, when you have these options. Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, though that there actually might be. I don't know what Dahl's home away split looks like, but it might make sense to start Bautista when Dahl's on the road. Even if they look good right now.
Oh, actually, you know what? I think it might make a lot of sense to start Bautista when Dahl has some lefties on the schedule, too. So
okay.
I'll just finish off with these splits. David Dahl, he is hitting .320 against lefties, but almost all singles, only one extra base hit in 25 at-bats.
Right.
And at home, his home road splits so far are almost identical. They're slightly better.
It's such a small sample though that I'm not sure we can really even deduce anything from it. It's just
that's
know,
fine, but I think he might sit against lefties.
Well, that hasn't happened yet.
I think it has. I think it has. I'm gonna check right now. This is going on longer than I thought, but that's okay. We're learning here. We are learning.
Learning is fun. Okay, so Dahl.
Oh, you're beating me to it, huh?
I did. He sat against the last lefty the Rockies faced, and that was okay. I mean, it's been he's started against most of the lefties, but he has sat on occasion. Yes.
Okay, but the last time he started against a lefty, Blackman was out. So, looking at the last two lefties that they faced with Blackman in the lineup, David Dahl has sat. So I think that might be a tiebreaker for you. If you are making these, it's not just going to be Andy. It's going to be a lot of people who have David Dahl who are making these decisions. Hopefully we'll see another lefty this week and we can kind of see what the Rockies are going to do. Oh, they're playing Rich Hill tonight, but it's a doubleheader. So, of course, he's going to sit. Damn it.
Yeah.
Okay. Scott, that's it. This was fun. Fun with splits. See
of
you later, my man.
All right. Have a good one.
Dun, 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 dun. That's my Mega Man 2. See ya. Machado.